Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code SMOOTH at checkout. That's harrys.com, code SMOOTH. Enjoy.
He is just an obsessive goal scorer.
They have to understand I chose to stay in my country because I'm French.
I haven't got a problem with soccer, to be fair.
Football.
Looking in the area to Pogba! Oh, what a start!
What I can guarantee to you is that they want to keep everything secret.
Oh yes, welcome in everybody. Big show today, reviewing all the weekend's action as the rest of Europe's top five completely wrapped up their campaigns, and we had a few cup finals to enjoy as well. So in the House of Champions today, we have, of course, Michael Lahoud, who looks like he had a fantastic week. How was the coverage, man? The sevens looked pretty good.
It was a ton of fun. Grassroots football at its finest, and the deserving champions ended up winning, a team from Connecticut called Newtown Pride FC. A lot of ballers. Hope they get some new deals and, you know, some opportunities in the future.
And $1 million to go with that as well. Speaking of $1 million, how you doing, Nigel Rio Coker?
I'm good, my friends. It's always been a pleasure to be back with you guys. I was looking forward to this so much. It's been a long time. long time. I missed you guys. So great to be on. Can't wait.
How are we doing, though? Let's just discuss and let's dive a little deeper into what you've been up to. And congratulations to you. I know it's been a very busy time for you, coaching-wise.
It's been good. I went to Northern Ireland to start the process doing my coaching badges, and it's just making that transition from thinking like a player to thinking like a coach. And you know what? Massive credit needs to go to that Northern Ireland organization and the coaches that we had. They are sensational in how they teach the course and also get us as players to understand the different dynamics. Not everyone who goes on the course is going to be a manager. I think now in the modern game of football, you have to understand there's a difference between a coach and a manager. Yes, a manager needs to know obviously how to coach a team and what goes behind it, preparation, everything, so you can identify a good coach for yourself. But then there's a different element when you become a manager. And the course basically helps you find which path suits you best, lets you be the manager that you want to be and be the coach that you want to be. And the way they run it and structure it, Ian, it's just so sensational because they let you understand that football is not seen the same through everyone's eyes. You know, they've had top-class players who Spanish internationals and played in Spain, and you know they're putting on sessions. And for us in England, we'd look at that to say, that's crazy if that's how you feel defending from wide areas is. But the reality of it is, that's just how they do it in Spain. So you have to respect that. And that's what I love about the course. It's not do it by the book, otherwise you're not going to pass, because that's not football. You know, what we've seen in the great managers we talk about, Klopp or Pep, they're not taught by the book and stay by the book. So it's just letting you be free. So I'll give a lot of credit to the Northern Ireland Football Federation, because the course is great. All the coaches were great. And also the people that I was on the course with were absolutely sensational. Great human beings, every single one of them.
Any big names there that our listeners would know?
Ooh, yeah. Everyone there was a big name. That's what I'm going to say, because they were great people.
Don't lie. You were the biggest name. That's what you're saying.
Actually, I wasn't. I wasn't. The funny guy that was the biggest name was Philippe Senderos.
He was dropping
names about the time when he was in AC Milan's dressing room and all the players that was there, you know, Bex, you know, Maldini. He was dropping so many names. I was just like, but no, Philippe was a top guy as well. Philippe Senderos, real top guy.
Well, well said as well, Nigel, because I know the Northern Ireland Federation, the association, what they have done has got this tremendous reputation. And that's why people all across the world are trying so desperately to get involved in this course. And they thoroughly deserve it. Some of the big names, as you mentioned, obviously, there's one of them. But there has been many a name who has come through with their coaching badges through those coaching courses over there. And long may it continue. And I love to hear the fact it's been what you've been talking about for such a long time. Football is different in everybody's eyes. It's different in even the same nationality's eyes. It's just different from every human being to human being. So I like the fact that they're coaching and allowing people to be themselves on that coaching course as well. Yep. Keep us posted as you go as well. I know you're not available on social media, so everybody can follow Nigel's path on Michael's social media, at Michael LaHood. Boys, let's get into it because we've got a lot to discuss and apparently we've only got 50 minutes to get into it. So we begin with what happened as we closed up the domestic leagues. I mean, let's obviously talk La Liga and Serie A to begin with, Mike, because in La Liga in particular, I watched the games in both. I have multiple TVs in my office and I'm trying to watch as many games as possible. But La Liga did not disappoint yesterday. And for some reason, I kept on going to Celta Vigo's game with Barcelona, and I had a feeling I may have placed a little wager that Celta Vigo were going to get that victory, and it did happen. But I actually parlayed it with Valladolid getting the victory against Getafe, thinking Valladolid, just win the game and you stay up. They couldn't, and Valladolid went down, incredibly so, with 40 points, Michael Hood. This is insane.
It's incredible, given that Valladolid had beaten Getafe earlier in the season, away from home, 3-2. You know that's going to give you confidence. And Valladolid, they had that sense of, okay, we got this team. And given the results that were happening, every team was leaving the back door open for them to survive. They couldn't get it done. I don't even think, did they even have a shot on goal? Didn't even think they registered that in this match. Extremely disappointed. You know, if you can't score, you're not going to stay up.
You're basically talking about our guy, Kyle Larin here. Kyle Larin obviously had a couple of opportunities. I know Plata had a couple of opportunities as well in this game. But he did have four shots. He did have a few shots that were very, very close, Kyle Larin here. But not being able to put the ball in the back of the net when all you need to do is just get one goal against a Getafe side and you're staying in the division. I mean, this is a beautiful thing, though, Nigel Riococher. La Liga didn't disappoint. It was at the top in the fight for European places. It was the relegation battle. La Liga was class. And I also watched Karim Benzema score his last goal for Real Madrid as well in a game that really mattered against Athletic Club Bilbao. The action never stopped until the final whistle in La Liga. It was a joy to watch.
It's a great football season for La Liga. And like you said, there, it really was great to watch. And there's excitement. That's the best thing about football when it goes all the way down to the final days and the final couple of weeks. And there's still possibilities that can happen. Going down with 40 points is crazy. It's happened before. But that just shows that, you know, when people say about the thing again, that I love it because it's something we can continue to talk about because it helps deter this whole Super League nonsense that people keep talking about because the excitement is still there, even at grassroots level. So it definitely was a great season for La Liga. And I think every league, really, when you look at the last game and what it means and then just understanding the relegation element of it, you and I understand it, Ian. Maybe Mike's quite new to relegation, but it's so exciting.
Poker in general.
Oh man, I missed you guys. I was just looking at my phone thinking one of these two going to absolutely hammer me. I'll just wait to come on House of Champions on Monday and just get my usual hammering. So business as usual, but we can't understate how massive this is for a certain club. Yes, fire the lead, go down. Some of the other, you know, Celta Vigo, big win. Gabriel Viega, two goal hero for them. He'll be their new hero up in Northwest Spain. But the one club I was keeping an eye on was Valencia because of U.S. men's national team implications for Yunus Musa. Couldn't have gone worse for him. He's been on the bench and coming off the bench and helping his team, doing his role, but he came in the 78th minute for Valencia and lasted 3 minutes, gets a red card in what could be his final appearance, most likely will be his final appearance for Valencia. And now for Valencia, they survived by 2 points, but Yunus Musa, he will be sold because Valencia need the money.
Did you see the tackle, Michael?
Yeah, raked him in the back of the leg.
Yeah, I mean, that's a clear red card there. I felt very sorry for him. He didn't clearly mean to catch him in the way he did do. And unfortunately, with video review, when they slow it down, it looks worse than what it really is. When we played before video review, you just get up and get on with it. But now players are embellishing contact because they know video review is going to look at absolutely everything now if you just slow the game down. It's just, you know, I'm getting really pissed off with the fact that players are rolling around like crazy on the ground now. It's just the game is totally gone, man.
Do you know what it is? It's I understand where it's coming from. I think what they need to do now is add X players with a bit of intelligence where they can say, look, that's a natural movement there. There's no maliciousness in there. Because I think when you're looking from a referee's perspective, you're only thinking as a referee. You have to understand as a player's perspective, they need that player's input in there now for some of these tackles, and common sense decisions have to be made. You know, you look at Casemiro's attempt in the FA Cup final this weekend, it was slowed down, and it does look bad, but it was genuine a bit more so than I would say than it wasn't a red card offense, you know. And players know when another player is going to hurt someone because players have done it. Like, I've done it plenty of times. I know when I'm trying to hurt you, and I know when I'm making a genuine attempt. So I think if they can get some kind of player's input in with the video assistant referees, then it will probably get better.
Yeah, I agree with you. Producer Dez is trying to get us to move on to Serie A, but we're absolutely not going to do that right now because we have to discuss Atletico Madrid bottling it in the last minute to make it 2-2. Pascual scored an equalizing goal. I think it was the 90 plus 2 minutes there against his Atletico Madrid, with Real Madrid tying 1-1. We thought maybe there's a chance for Atleti to just leapfrog into that second spot in La Liga. Didn't quite happen. Producer Dez is telling me to move on now, Kian, before you get into trouble. Let's move on to Serie A. Also, before we do, shout out to Almeria as well, by the way. Mbaraba's goal in the 88th minute there to equalize, keeping them up. Fabulous. Move on to Serie A. Serie A was pretty spectacular, Mike. And we got to talk about the relegation, because I didn't know this was necessarily the case with Serie A, that they could go to a playoff game if you were level on points there. But Spezia and Hellas Verona will have that one playoff game with the relegation after ending the season tied on 31 points. I was watching Roma against Spezia. At one point, they had the lead in that game.
Crazy.
It was a good game. It was a very good game. And unfortunately for them, Roma's quality just shone through, even though Roma were not at their best.
No, this is the first time I think we've seen a playoff relegation battles, I think, since 2005 between Parma and Bologna. And there's reasons for that, because, I mean, Serie A teams, usually the teams at the bottom, you know which teams aren't going to make it. And, you know, this is what happens when you're Spezia in particular. I look at the two strikers, Nzola and Giassi. These are players that could step up and play in certain teams above them in the table. These are Spezia. They've beaten both Milan sides at home. But now with the playoff relegation game, it's at a neutral site. It'll nullify that home field advantage. And for Verona, playing against Milan, they couldn't cope with the pace and the dynamic movement of Rafael Leao. Got two goals in that matchup. I give the edge to Spezia, because they have the speed, they have the power, and Nzola runs in the channels. And if you can't cope with the likes of Leao, you won't be able to cope with the likes of Nzola, because he'll get in the left channel and square it for Giassi for a finish.
You know, Ian, Mike, the big thing about football is the beauty of this game is, you know, for new fans, we've got the young fans. One club that's gone down, we haven't spoken about how big a club they are in history in Italian football, Sampdoria.
Yep.
Them going down again just shows just how the game has changed so much now. Because historically, Sampdoria were one of the big staple diets of Italian football, and they find themselves relegated again.
Nigel, they won 3 games from 38 games this season, and they did lose 25 games. So I can't imagine the players were too happy with their bonuses that season for Sampdoria. They were poor to watch, man. And they had, in my personal opinion with Sampdoria in particular, far too many loan players. They had way too much experience, obviously not performing. It was just disappointing to watch them.
When you look at the old Sampdoria, they always used to produce. Their academy was absolutely sensational. And that's, I think, a big aspect of football now that a lot of these clubs are going away from. They need to go back into the development mode, because they used to have an academy that was sensational, not just in Italy, but in Europe. And they've gone away from that. And then when you get so many loans, it doesn't work out. Because the same thing happened as well in Spain with Granada, was another team that did that, with so many loans at one point. And you're going to get no continuity, no real connectiveness and togetherness.
Real quickly before we do move away from Serie A, Roma and Atalanta sealing the Europa League spots there. Michael, you obviously watched a bit of the Roma game. Dybala making a big difference, man. He's just such a top quality player. Tammy Abraham I don't know if you guys saw it, but the disastrous ACL injury, really awkward fall on his knee, kind of twisted it as he hyperextended his knee, and you knew immediately this was bad news for him, Mike.
I feel for him. This is a guy who it hasn't gone his way. Last season, he was their talisman. He was leading the line, scoring goal after goal. And for a relentless worker, you see the work he put in that Europa League final. And I just feel for him. This is a guy who is bought into Italian soccer and Serie A, bought into Jose Mourinho's way. And to have your season end like that, gutted for him. But Paulo Dybala, this guy, what, I think 23 of his last 26 penalty kicks, he's converted. This guy's cool under pressure, and he is a difference maker. Roma, the best thing they can do is not just keep Dybala, but if they can keep Jose Mourinho, now you can attract other players who will want to come and play with a star like Paulo Dybala.
Real quickly, Nigel, go ahead. Add on Tammy, and then I want to also hear from you about Mourinho. Does he leave Roma? Go ahead.
Tammy, I feel sorry for. I felt that probably he probably would have got a move this summer. I think there would have been quite a few interested parties in Tammy Abraham, and it's just a sad way to go. And it's always difficult when you get these injuries, especially towards the end of the season. Again, it depends on relationships. But for me, Jose Mourinho is going to leave. I can't see him staying at Roma. I really can't. You know, for him to really make Roma as competitive they want, they need massive more investment. They really need to get a squad that can compete. Tammy and Dybala, for me, have been the two big difference makers. And at the highest level of European football, you need a squad. We talk about it when you look at the best teams and the squad and the players they have on the bench. We can't say that with Roma. So I think we need to give Jose Mourinho as a manager a lot more credit for what he's done with that squad at Roma. Like, he's overachieved. Reality, when you go player for player, squad for squad, he's massively overachieved. I think that Paris Saint-Germain really are trying to do things the right way, and I would not be surprised if he does end up in PSG. I think that's the kind of project that would suit him. And I think that's the kind of manager that they will back and open the books for.
Do you know what? Yesterday I was doing a little digging, and I don't know if it was Dez who put it in the notes, but someone had mentioned the preferred choice for Paris Saint-Germain would be Julian Nagelsmann with Thierry Henry as assistant coach for PSG. And I thought, oh my God, that sounds like it could be a disaster.
That is absolutely a disaster train. That is a disaster train happening. I can really see Thierry Henry wanting to sit back and say, I'm assistant.
Yeah, right.
Little German man, sit down.
I thought the USMNT job was coming. No?
We'll have to wait and see what happens with USMNT, because apparently no one wants to take that job right now, Michael Hood. That's the biggest problem they've got, especially with the World Cup right around the corner. All right, quick chat on what's happening with Karim Benzema before we do jump to a quick break. Obviously, Karim Benzema played his last game for Real Madrid yesterday. Reports are that he is gone. The contract is already done and dusted. 200 million euros a year. Contract until 2025, if I'm not mistaken here. Michael, come back to you first on this one, because obviously Karim Benzema's legacy is just absolutely phenomenal. 25 trophies in 14 seasons. And many people will always talk about the fact that Cristiano Ronaldo was Mr. Real Madrid when it comes to winning trophies. But for me, the work done behind the scenes, especially in the shadows of Cristiano Ronaldo, it was Karim Benzema who was keeping this train rolling.
I liken it to when Shaq and Kobe Bryant were together with the LA Lakers. And for those of you who remember that, I mean, they were unstoppable. What, three-peat? And it looked like it was never going to end. Shaq leaves, goes to Miami, wins his one, and everyone's saying, okay, it was all Shaq. But then Kobe was left to do it on his own. This is what I think of when I think of Karim Benzema. When CR7 left, that was the player that he was doing all the work for, much like Kobe was doing for Shaq. But now that in that last season, scoring 15 goals, Cristiano Ronaldo has the record in UEFA Champions League in a single season record, 17, then 16, and now Big Ben's along with Robert Lewandowski. Last season cemented his legacy for me. What happened this season, winning the Ballon d'Or on his own, yes, assisted by Vinicius Jr., but this guy showed that, hey, what he was doing behind the scenes and setting up the likes of Gareth Bale, Cristiano Ronaldo, as much as it was going unappreciated by world football, Carlo Ancelotti really saw something in him to give him the armband. No Sergio Ramos. He led by example last season for Real Madrid, and it's paid off in the Ballon d'Or, and it's paid off in his legacy.
Mm-hmm. Nigel.
Yeah, Karim Benzema for me is Mr. Real Madrid. You talk about the likes of Raul and the legends have gone there. Karim Benzema is in that boat. Mr. Real Madrid, 14 years, won it all, done it all, seen it all. World Player of the Year. He embedded what it is to play for Real Madrid and what it means. He didn't always get the shine or recognition. He reminds me a bit, as Michael went with Shaq and Kobe, I would say Karim Benzema, because of his personality, was a bit of Allen Iverson. So to the world, it wasn't palatable because he's a bit of a bad boy of football. Not as bad as Ibrahimovic, but he is a bad boy of football. So he probably didn't get the recognition because of maybe his outside image of the game. But what he did, you can't deny the talent that he had. And good luck to him. I'm not actually surprised that he's making this move. You know, some of us who come from those type of areas, we know how some of these guys operate and think, but he is Mr. Real Madrid. You know, that's it.
We'll come back to that in just a minute here, Nigel, before we do hit the break, especially when it comes to finances. But real quickly, I can't imagine Real Madrid are too happy. I can only imagine there's a sense of panic right now as to how in hell you replace Karim Benzema, because they would have pretty much been working on the fact, and you have to work in advance when you're looking at the next season. You can't just like make changes within weeks. It has to be work that goes in for months to be able to replace a player like a Karim Benzema, and maybe even a year to try and replace someone like him. So Real Madrid are behind right now as to finding that replacement, or are they behind Michael Hood? Who would be the perfect replacement in your eyes? And what is a realistic replacement for him?
Oh, there's only two strikers of world-class caliber in world football. And Nigel, I'm not going to steal your shine in it because you named one of them, and Victor Osimhen and Harry Kane. Realistically, though, I think of the likes of Bobby Firmino. I think that that's a player who's already on their radar in that Karim Benzema sort of form, playing as a false nine to bring in the likes of Vinicius Jr. and Rodrigo. And he's not going to cost you as much as some of the other players. But Harry Kane and Victor Osimhen, those are the two that you have to go after at all costs.
They're the two best ones, Ian. But let's remember this. When you talk about Real Madrid, you might think they're behind. But when Real Madrid say they're interested in a player, all players' heads go out, well, like, yeah, their commitment to their contract or whatever club they're at, forget it. It's Real Madrid. They will go. So Real Madrid are one of those clubs where they come knocking. You can never say that they're behind. It's the same as Manchester City. Now, really, in world football, you look at some of these clubs, they're not left behind. They're the two best strikers that Mike said, in the likes of Harry Kane and Osimhen. Depending which one they go for, I'd probably say Kane is probably going to be the more recognized one in the sense of consistently season in, season out. He is a natural goal scorer. He is a natural goal scorer. But the difference he's got to understand is when you go and play for Real Madrid, there's an element of style of goals and skill that comes to it and style of play that the Spanish audience want to see. So I think he'll be great there. I think it's the perfect match. And I think Tottenham would rather sell Harry Kane to Real Madrid than to one of their rivals in the English Premier League, in the likes of Manchester United or anyone else.
I don't know if I agree with you, Nigel, there as far as Real Madrid being prepared for this, because it's going to take 100 plus to get Osimhen away from Napoli, and there's no guarantees he's going to be able to score the goals that they need to replace Karim Benzema. If you're looking at the same stature of player, you've got to look at an Mbappe, which he signed a contract to stay on at PSG. You've got to look at Erling Haaland, which apparently was his dream to play for Real Madrid, and yet he went to Manchester City. I mean, last year you could have got Erling Haaland for 75 million was his buyout clause at Manchester City. So don't tell me that Real Madrid are lagging behind, because they missed the boat on that one. He already claimed that his
Let's be real. As good as Erling Haaland has done, like you said, we've already seen clips come out that at Real Madrid is his dream. Mbappe said the same thing. If they could come to an agreement and say, right, we could give you this and that, these players will go to Real Madrid. That's my point. That's
from
why
City now. You're saying Erling Haaland would leave Manchester City
to Real Madrid.
Not
yes, he would.
No chance.
Michael, let me finish this. Let me say my point. He's already dominated the Premier League. Look what he's done with the goal scoring he's got. If they win the Champions League, he's done the treble in his first year of Manchester City. Why would he not go to Real Madrid and be long-term at Real Madrid? Why would he stay? He's done it. Think like a player. Let's not be silly about this now.
Next year. Because there's always next year to do the treble again. He's done the treble again.
There's only two clubs in England that's done... Well, if Manchester City do it, there'll only be two clubs who've ever done the treble in England, and they're both the Manchester clubs. He's already conquered England, where they cannot even deny him. And then now you can go to Real Madrid, one of the biggest clubs in the world, where to win that World Player of the Year, he pretty much has to be there, really and truly. That's why I say, when you say Real Madrid, you're not lacking behind.
I'm not seeing that move, just because it's so dependent on if Manchester City can find a way to keep the band back together. If you're Erling Haaland, why would you leave when you already have a set group of players who you're winning with? You see it so much in sports.
Michael, he said and it's been leaked out. Real Madrid is his dream move. His family's, but like, it's already been out there.
But he has a dream team. He's a dream team around him.
It's out there for a reason. He's leaving on the highest of highs. He's coming.
He's only there.
Can I just add something here now? Can I just add one more thing before we go to break? That his father's no longer welcome at the Bernabeu anymore, just so we don't forget that there.
Oh, they're welcome him now. With caviar and champagne. With what he's done, they're welcoming with caviar and champagne. Trust me.
Just very quick, when we talk about is Madrid ready for this, I agree with Ian that they're not, because four attackers, four strikers leaving all at once. Eden Hazard, I mean, absolute flop, and we'll talk more about that if he's the worst signing of all time, but absolute flop. Mariano Diaz, less of a flop, than Howard, but still a flop. Asensio out, and now Benzema. You're telling me Real Madrid was prepared for that throughout this season? Absolutely not.
Chance.
I think it's panic station.
No, we don't have any more time, Nigel. We got to go to break, and I'm going to go to break before this call right now. Hold on. This one's for you, Nigel. It says Ed jumping in and says, for $100 million a year, I think NRC will sprint out of retirement. Well, maybe not sprint out of retirement. You can have an answer when we come back from break. We got to go to break. We're 24 minutes into the show, and apparently this was supposed to be under 50 minutes. Dez, take us a break.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code Spotify for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Dan Orlovsky, are you still a Jaden Daniels is the best quarterback available in the draft guy?
I think the three things that make it stand out for me are, number one, I think his ball placement versus man coverage is the best in the draft. Every quarterback in the NFL is accurate. He's got the best on tape. Number two, most transferable stuff to the NFL. And then I think the third thing is pocket peace.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Welcome back into the House of Champions debate show, where we're going to give Nigel Riococher the floor to answer Michael Lahoud right now. Go ahead, Nigel.
Oh, boy.
No, I'm not motivated by money, mate, so I can't come out of retirement. That family man now.
Interesting point.
What Mike said is right. You said they're not prepared, right? Let's not forget, we're not even talking about Endrick, the young Brazilian that they bought for 60, 70 million. So like you said about, they're not, Real Madrid are prepared. The only thing is right now, yes, they need a recognized goal scorer, but look at the market. It's a selling market right now. And again, I'll keep saying it. When you say Real Madrid, these players will go. There's certain clubs as a player, when you know these clubs are interested in you, you're going to go. We can't act like footballers are very loyal people, just like clubs are not very loyal. So I think, again, if Erling Haaland leaves, and this is just hypothetically speaking, he's conquered England and achieved tremendous stuff at the high to go to Real Madrid. I don't think there's any Manchester City fan that's going to begrudge them. Let's be real. Mm-hmm.
I think they've got a great midfield, no doubt about it. What they've done is they've set themselves up for a decade of football coming forward from that midfield. Maybe they could do with some work along that centre-back position. Clearly got one of the best goalkeepers in world football right now.
Don't forget left back Ian.
Yeah, okay, listen, I'm going to move on real quickly because we've got to fire through the second segment before I get fired. Lionel Messi leaving Paris Saint-Germain, and I watched the game this weekend. There was a lot of boos in Paris. They got beat by Clermont at home. 3-2. It was embarrassing watching PSG over the last final weekdays. I'm glad Jonathan Johnson's not in here to basically just get after them even more. But rumor has it now, Michael, that George Messi has met with Laporta and says that his son would prefer a move to Barcelona. We're also hearing that there's a potential massive offer coming in from Saudi, who are apparently dumping in billions and billions of dollars to football to strengthen their league. Where's your thoughts with this?
As a football romantic, I hope he goes back to Barcelona, but I can't see how that's going to work out with Barcelona. There's rumors because of the financial restrictions. I mean, they've sold so many levers. The only thing left to sell is the alphabets in their name. So maybe if they sell everything but the B in Barcelona, they might still have money left over to buy other players. I mean, Messi is a world figure, world icon. This was supposed to be the moment where he goes back and ties a bow on just a storied career. The greatest player of all time. I still think that Saudi move, though, that's a lot of money to turn down. And if it doesn't work out financially with Barcelona, he's going to Saudi Arabia.
Wow, Ian, you hear that?
Mm-hmm.
The American is not even talking about the American League. He didn't even mention anything about Inter Miami. Michael, wow. Mm-hmm. You disgust me, you fake American.
I'm staying out of that chat, man.
I've got a question for you, Ian. I've got a question for you and Mike. Right, let's be real. We know we're living in a bit of a corporate world now and how football is. I'm not in agreement with it. And the way I love it is I love grassroots stories, like the fact of Luton Town being promoted to the Premier League from where they come from. That's the beauty of football that we need to keep pushing. But think about this. Do you not think somehow, some way, La Liga will work with Barcelona, even though they know Barcelona have messed up a lot financially? Because think about what getting Messi back to La Liga means for the league as a whole.
Especially after losing Benzema.
Now you've lost Benzema now. With the issues with Vinicius Jr., because that's not going to stop. You know, next year he's going to continue to get racially abused. Do you not think that La Liga will somehow overlook certain things and speak to other clubs to say, listen, whether you like it or not, we need to make this happen because then we can all eat from TV revenue? I'm just saying.
Mike, you want to answer that?
No, I'll let you go. I was too busy laughing at something.
La Liga has to do something drastic and something important. And producer Dez is jumping in our private chat here saying also the same thing. La Liga needs to do something drastic. But let's not forget who's running La Liga right now. It's a freaking idiot that's running La Liga right now. And politically, what has gone wrong for La Liga this campaign has been maybe overshadowed with the fact that La Liga has been very entertaining to watch this year with relegation. I think six teams could have got relegated on that final match day. It was must-watch football. And promotion, and not promotion, but the fight for Europe. I think it was five teams fighting for those European places in the end there, which I think Osasuna claimed it. It was must-watch football, and it was great to watch. It was good football. It was good entertainment. But you cannot forget that this league has been overshadowed this year with what has gone on off the field. The fan trouble with racism, chants, monkey chants, everything directed at Vinicius Jr. And also I would extend that and say that on the field there's a problem as well, because what I'm seeing now in La Liga more than anything else is players being targeted, Vinicius Jr. being the obvious choice. Players are going after him now. Players are wanting a reaction for him. Yeah. I don't know if that is racially motivated or if it's professionally motivated, but what people are doing right now is they're wanting a reaction from young players. It's making me say to young players, now obviously you talked about Endrick going to Real Madrid, not want to go to play in the league anymore because there's no protection from the league. And the league right now is having a big problem keeping their superstars. So to be able to attract Lionel Messi, the league has to do something. They have to do something. They got to make it feasible for Barcelona to make this move work, because I don't see him going to any other club, although it would have been pretty awesome to see him play for Real Madrid. Dare I say it? I'm only saying that because a moment ago. But I just don't see it. Mike, what's your thoughts?
I struggle with that. I hear what both of you are saying in terms.
Don't be diplomatic. Just bloody say something. Don't be diplomatic and sit on the fence. All right.
I'm not sitting on the fence. I'm going for blood. I struggle with that because Barcelona, there's just so much scandal that they've been involved in with the levers, with the refereeing stuff. And yes, as a football purist, as someone who wants to see La Liga, especially I have more excitement about La Liga because Sevilla winning than I do the thought of Messi going back to Barcelona. For Messi himself, yes, this would be awesome for his own story, for football fans. But
this is the point. This is bigger than Barcelona. This is for the league as a whole. That's what you got to think. You got to think from those corporate guys' point of view. This is what they'll say. Listen, Messi comes back here. There's going to be massive TV revenue interest. There's going to be viewership around the world. We're all going to eat. Other clubs will have to swallow the pill of the situation with Barcelona, and you can punish them at a later date. But they need a superstar. They need Lionel Messi to come back. And I think that they'll try and work to make it happen, because the worst thing they can do is lose Lionel Messi to go to somewhere else. Because what has the league got? Ian's made all the points with Vinicius Jr., with the racism trouble. Players can see everything now. Why would they want to go to La Liga? They'll just go to Serie A. I'm not saying that's perfect, but they'll go to
Germany. I'd even say as far as young black players now would not want to go to La Liga. And I would even go as far as to say as Vinicius Jr., might be looking for an exit.
We'll probably leave.
Away. Yeah.
100%.
He might be looking for an exit.
If it happens next year, he will leave, and there will be big takers. Yeah. Big takers. You know Paris Saint-Germain will be there in a heartbeat. Probably Chelsea will be there in a heartbeat as well.
Saudi Arabia.
Saudi, I would say that's...
Saudi Arabia, Saudi
would put him on the country flag just to get him over, man.
I can see it right now. I can see it. Nigel Rio Coker takes a head coaching job in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, right.
Al Ahly's new coach, baby.
Everyone has a price, Nigel Real Cook. All right, we got to discuss the FA Cup final really quickly. We're really pushing the show. Sorry, Mike, I'm going to come to you first on this one.
I would apologize to him.
We only have 12 seconds to talk through this show here, because 12 seconds is apparently all it takes to lose this cup final. I hadn't even got my text message off to my father saying, let's hope United put out a good performance before Manchester City scored, thanks to Gundogan, the fastest goal in FA Cup history. And it wasn't Manchester United's day.
No, it wasn't. I was having amnesia thinking about approaching this when we had it in the rundown. And I was thinking, there was a game at the weekend. I don't know, FA Cup or something. And now I know why. Ilkay Gundogan, this guy has an S on his chest, man. I said it before, he is the Mr. October or Mr. November of baseball when it comes to Manchester City and when it comes to football. Both volleys, the first one world-class, but if you're Manchester United, Christian Eriksen, Casemiro, Fred, they were chasing shadows. That box in midfield for Man City, it's crippled many a teams, and it absolutely devastated Manchester United at the weekend. They couldn't get close to him, and they had a gift of a penalty kick call to get into the match. And as a United fan, I text all of you guys when we were going back and forth, was it a PK? It shouldn't have been a PK. But even as United fan, I couldn't even let my bias get in the way of that. And even if a gift of a call, it put Band-Aid on what was a clear ass beating from
Mike.
City.
I thought the less you say, the better it is, but keep going.
Go on, Nige. Clearly, listen, you want to put the salt in the wounds.
Not rocket science. Man United are still miles apart. This is Michael's already covered the game, so I'm not even going to go there again. I'm just going to leave some thoughts for people to think about. Erik ten Hag's stock as a manager has gone tremendously up, because you look at what he's achieved and done with this Manchester United side. For Manchester United to compete at the highest level again, the Glazer family need to go. If they don't go, they're never going to compete. That's just the reality of it. Because they're still acting like they want to sell the club, but they don't want to sell the club because they know financially what they can achieve from this club. That is why they're stalling on selling the club, because they want to still be involved in the corner somewhere making money off this club. Until they leave, you're not going to be successful. What you need to worry about now is, if this continues, Erik ten Hag has showed how much of a tremendous manager he is potentially. He's a manager that can take big clubs. And there's a lot of big clubs who need a manager like him. He could probably leave if this continues with the nonsense that Manchester United is. Your squad is nowhere near as good enough as Manchester City. Look at the substitutions were made and the quality of players that was coming on. Calvin Phillips can't even get a game at Manchester City, and how much they pay for him. Alvarez, a World Cup winning striker, stayed on the bench. And we know who came on for Manchester United. So let's just leave it at that. But it was a great cup final. Good run, sensational. What a volley. End of story.
Great goal. Yeah, great goal. And then we did discuss the fact that Gundogan was going to have an important part to play in cup finals. And I don't think that's the last story he has written at Manchester City just yet. Apparently rumored to be negotiation for an extended year, potentially 2 more years at Manchester City. It's difficult to replace Gundogan just because of the experience that he has on that field, but also the quality and what he does, what he brings to that Ian, group of players. It's phenomenal.
Who's out there, Ian? Who's out there? And then the thing is, you know as well, Ian, when you've got players like that who've embedded in the club on one thing, they set a culture and a precedence for any younger player coming through. So if you get someone with potential to stay there for 2 years watching Gundogan and learning under the wings, it's only going to benefit the club. That's the best thing, because players like that don't come around often.
Let me just add, someone who's in a similar mold who played at the same club would be Jude Bellingham. Bellingham is a similar mold player to Gundogan. He scores goals. He gets into the box. He is a leader. Yeah. He motivates. He pushes. He might actually, and I'm just going to throw this out there and apologize to every German out there, but I think Jude Bellingham could be a better player than Gundogan has been in his career. And Gundogan's obviously a World Cup winner, fabulous player, but I think Bellingham has the ability and the brain, the mentality, the professionalism to be a better player. Just throwing it out there. I agree with you.
I think the potential is there. But he has to do it. I think
a thing that he has that Gundogan doesn't, he has all those same things, the physical prowess. The physical prowess to compete, to battle, to ride tackles. That's something that gives him a bit of an edge. If he can keep that up, I mean, when he gets in the box, so in the Bundesliga, how many times have we seen him ride a challenge, turn his body one way, push a defender off, and slot a pass or make a goal happen?
Yeah, what I love about him is just the fact that he don't care who he's playing against. This guy just loves football, and he wants to be the best he can be. So Manchester City win the final by 2-1. Just to read out real quickly before we just discuss Manchester United and then head to break here. Trophies won by Manchester City since Sheikh Mansour took over the club. 7 Premier League titles, 6 League Cups, 3 Community Shields, and now 3 FA Cups. Is there a Champions League incoming? That's the question mark we're all waiting to see. We'll find out next weekend. Smiles from everybody out there. Mike Olihood, Manchester United. Obviously, as Nigel pointed out there, sometimes it is a bit laughable with the squad depth here. But there was comments from Roy Keane about Mason Mount not being able to help this club going forward. And obviously, we still continue to hear the links of a Harry Kane coming to the club. Manchester United need to make moves in the transfer window to be a better football club to compete in the Premier League once again.
They absolutely do. And it's getting that center forward position locked in first and foremost. I agree with Roy Keane about Mason Mount. When I heard Fabrizio Romano talk about Mason Mount, I want to give you something about Mason Mount. Yes, that first season, the assist in the Champions League final, had a quality first season under Thomas Tuchel, not his actual first season. But under Tuchel, yes, that was a good campaign in the Champions League. But Mason Mount, what he contributes to Chelsea, he's actually a good defensive player. He tracks back, wins the ball, and then creates counterattacking. United, they do not need more midfield players. They needed a defensive midfield player next to Casemiro.
They do need more midfield players. They need the right one.
Let me continue. They need a box-to-box midfield player that's going to complement Casemiro. Mason Mount is not it. Don't think that's the right fit.
Jude?
At striker, though. Oh, my gosh. Yes, please, Jude, come. That is the sort of player they need. That is a sort of player they need. Every team needs that. But Harry Kane, if you are Erik ten Hag, if you are the board, get him at all costs. Marcus Rashford, I do not want to see him play center forward unless it's in a 4-4-2 again for United. You cannot compete against Manchester City if you don't have a striker. Bare minimum, you need to have a recognizable striker to create any threat. Anytime United tries to do... Who? Who? Anytime that United try to play that blind pass as they've done throughout the season over the top, Kyle Walker, you have 3 center backs racing down. It was 3v1 on Rashford all day. You're never going to win an FA Cup like that.
Interesting comment coming in from Ed here. Mike, he says, your thoughts on Tyler Adams to Manchester United? Not good enough.
As a rotation player, maybe, but I don't think that's the right move. I think that another team can take a hand on them. If we're getting players like Tyler Adams, not the right move. Ian,
this is just an example, again, of what Manchester United are about. The recruitment and the players and picking, there's no structure, no plan. There hasn't been for a while. If you've got any common sense, listen to Erik ten Hag. Whoever Erik ten Hag wants, give it to him.
I agree.
For me, I don't see Mason Mount fitting down with Roy Keane. I think Mason Mount suits more of a Liverpool. If you want the midfielder that Manchester United want, there's only one for me that's available, Caicedo. Caicedo from Brighton is the perfect midfield of what Manchester United want, being able to be that defensive rock, comfortable getting the ball in tight areas and making things happen. He should be the number one target. Let's not try and reinvent the wheel. Manchester United have always been their greatest with a striker. Do we need to name all the top world-class strikers and great strikers they've had at that club? They don't have one right now. So Harry Kane, for me, would be a great start if they can get him. If not, like we said again, the only other one that they need top level is Osimhen. But all of this is down to whether the Glazers are going to put the money in and really want to compete or just keep running Manchester United as just a financial, successful club where they're very comfortable and enjoying life.
Yeah, well said. Quick note here to let you know that the AFB Pokal obviously took place this weekend as well. RB Leipzig won by 2-0 against Eintracht Frankfurt. Christopher Nkunku, new Chelsea player, scored in each of his last 4 appearances in the AFB Pokal. Get this one, he scored 23 goals across all competitions, 4-4 in the AFB Pokal. His last game for the club, and he won Golden Boot, and he was out injured for 4.5 months. Incredible statistic right there. They are back-to-back champions and they're only one of 3 clubs to be able to do it. Schalke did it in 2001 and 2. Bayern Munich have done it multiple times and Leipzig now 22 and 23 champions of Germany. Last game for Oliver Glasner. It'll be interesting to see where he goes. Great work in cup competition for Frankfurt. Nowhere near good enough in the Bundesliga. Quick break from us. We're going to discuss some of the retirees from the legends of the game and also the UEFA Europa Conference League that is coming up between Fiorentina and West Ham. Stick around.
Baseball has begun, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today in 5, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Sample, every Monday through Saturday as we deliver all of your fantasy baseball needs in just 5 minutes. We'll break down the biggest performers, news, and prospects who could make an impact this season. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.
If you want to win your fantasy football league, it starts right now. The offseason is the best time to get ahead of the competition. We'll help you win your league on the Fantasy Football Today podcast, part of CBS Sports Podcast Network. Fantasy Football Today has 3 episodes every week following the latest news, giving you early rankings, early sleepers, breakouts, and busts. So if you're a dedicated fantasy football manager, check out the most dedicated podcast, Fantasy Football Today. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found.
Welcome back to House of Champions. You enjoy Nigel Real Coker, Michael LaHood. Jump in the conversation as much as you possibly can and feel free to leave a comment. We have a few great comments coming in. Clearly, some people are a bit irritated by my choice of words here. So Ed jumping in and saying, Ian, you can never call Javier Tebas an idiot. I think they prefer the term mentally challenged. I love that comment, Ed. You know exactly where I'm going with this one here. We do have obviously some legends who have retired from the game. Nigel, I want to touch upon this because obviously very difficult understanding to leave the game. Most of us never wanted to leave the game. We were forced to leave the game. There are certain players who continue to play on until they can no longer play on. And Zlatan retired this weekend, announcing his retirement. Immediately following the game, terrific reception from Milan. The way they handled this post-game was outstanding. And this is how legends, who by the way in his 40s now, should retire.
Absolute legend of the game. More than a footballer, he's an absolute character of the game. He makes people who might not even be interested in football get interested in football because of him. I love players like Zlatan because of the personality that he is. I'm not going to say I agree with everything he said, but I love the confidence that he has, the character and the man that he has. He's retired, which is always difficult and hard, but you always see he's going to be still part of football. Like, he's too big a character to walk away from the game itself. The hardest part is making that transition now, not being in that dressing room, not being part of that team, the training, the traveling, the laughs and the jokes that you can never put it into words. And that's when people always ask you what it's like. You can't put it into words. I can give you a basic foundation of it, but to really live it is when you really understand what it's like. But, you know, unbelievable career, unbelievable personality for the game of football. And I'm sure he's still going to be involved in it.
Mike?
Yeah, what impressed me most, and I love everything you said about, you know, being a footballer, being in the locker room, that's one of the things I always miss. There's nothing like the locker room. And for those of you who have gotten a chance to be in the locker room at whatever level, that is a sacred space. And, you know, I still miss it. And whenever I go play pickup or anything or get a chance to go back to a locker room for a club, something comes alive in me. But when I look at Zlatan's career, he did it in different countries. Wherever he went, he was the same Zlatan. Had that audacity to do things, try things, say things, and put his stamp of authority on different leagues. When I look at what he did in Milan, he went back to Milan, older in his career, and he was scoring goals in his late 30s. But what impressed me the most, he gave that winning mentality, that sort of winning presence in the locker room to lead them to that Scudetto to last season.
His comments yesterday were sensational. Milan have since posted it on their social media. So if you get a chance to go and listen to it, it's absolutely fantastic. It makes the hair stand up. But he also, at one point while he was doing his comments, you had the Hellas Verona fans booing him because he was up there and he said, listen to this. He said, hey, be quiet. Let me have my words. This is the greatest moment of your season so far, being able to see me out here with a microphone. It was just
awesome.
Zlatan. And managed to watch him, obviously, closely in Major League Soccer. I was actually there at his final Major League Soccer game, and just seeing the stature of him and what he did in MLS was outstanding. Obviously, being a part of so many great clubs and an absolute legend, an icon of the game. I would have loved to have seen him do more national team-wise. I just don't think Sweden were up to it But yeah. What he did in club football was just absolutely outstanding. Real quickly, Dez jumping in and saying he also said in his press conference, if the decision was up to Raiola, I would have kept playing because he wanted the commission fees. Sorry, Mino, but it's the truth. And of course, he's talking about his late agent, Mino Raiola, who was just another legend of the game. Let's just discuss real quickly Mateo Lujos, the referee in Spain, who also retired this weekend. He got the Guard of Honor, which is absolutely fabulous to see. Obviously, tremendous respect for him. One of the most controversial referees in world football. He's a FIFA referee since, if I'm not mistaken, about 2010, 2011. The game between Mallorca and Rayo was his last game here. Mike, certainly a legend of the game, whether we like it or not.
Yeah, controversy is what I think of when I think of him. He was someone who had just a knack of having a way of making the game, whatever big game he reffed, about him. In this photo, I'm surprised he's not giving a yellow card or red card, and just to culminate a career that was just so focused on giving cards. At the end of the day, if you like him or you hate him, you can't say that he wasn't willing to take a chance on giving cards out. So, hey, congrats to you. I hope you go somewhere like Ibiza, go right off in the sun, and never come back. Kidding. Have a good group retirement.
I think, Ian, for me, you know, when you talk about greatest refs, there's only one picture that comes into my mind.
Say it.
Colina.
Yep.
He's the greatest ref ever. And the thing about him is, I don't think any football fan can ever say that he made the game about him or anything like that. He was the best referee at being a referee and partial. Like he just was in total control. When you talk about just ice cold and that stare that he used to give when he opened up his eyes to the players, like every player, every club, every manager respected him. Yeah. And those were the days of football with real big characters where players would try you. But when he was refereeing, even the biggest personalities in the pitches would not try him. For me, he's one of the greatest.
I think he obviously was an icon of the game that players looked up to, Colina. And I think Lujos, obviously, and other officials out there who have got character, learned from Colina and how he handled players and tried to communicate with players, because Colina was terrific. He tried to have a relationship with players on the field, and you kind of respected that. Obviously, the game has completely changed right now, and he didn't have the use of what they have right now in the game. Yeah. But for sure, we have to respect what Lujos did. Let's move on, and we'll finish quickly on the UEFA Europa Conference League, because obviously, Nigel, we got you here, Fiorentina against West Ham now in the final. It's a massive game to look forward to. Obviously, for West Ham fans, it was a little bit unfortunate, the incidents that took place at Alkmaar in the last game, but delighted to see West Ham take care of business and get to a final. Final is going to be taking place in Prague. Of course, you can watch it on Paramount Plus and CBS Sports, but the build-up to this game is brilliant, because Fiorentina are not a bad side. They're a dangerous team. They can beat anyone. Watch them on Friday against Sassuolo. Very, very good again. And against this West Ham side, who, in my personal opinion, they have underperformed the season, yet they're in a final. They could bring their best performance, and they might need it in the final.
1,000% underperformed. But again, it's about run of form, and they've hit form at the right time, get themselves to European final. It's going to be a great game. Fiorentina are going to be no easy mugs. West Ham have kind of been saving themselves for this final to at least end their season on the high. But I'm sure Fiorentina are not going to want that as well. They're going to want to end their season on a high. Worst place that this final could take place is in a city called Prague, because let's just say the beer in Prague is very cheap. I just hope that both sets of fans behave themselves. I've been to Prague. I know how cheap the beer is there. You've got West Ham fans going there. Just turn off the tap till at least after the game.
I thought you didn't like beer, NRC. You're always giving me crap for sending you all the beer.
I'm pick. A man of the world. Yeah, I don't drink the crap beer that you drink, but I don't mind a good beer now and then.
I set myself up for that as usual. Yeah. I'm excited for this final. Fiorentina obviously disappointed in the Coppa Italia final. Didn't go their way, but they will be riled up about this one. And I've seen West Ham and Nige, you know them better than anyone, but I like this Fiorentina side. I think that they're wide players are what make them dangerous. And one wide player in particular, Nico Gonzalez, this guy is a baller. And if you give him half an inch, he'll take a mile. And I think West Ham, what they've done well in this cup competition is defensively. They've clamped down on teams' attackers defensively. Last season, this team in cup competition reminds me of what made them so difficult to play against last season, was they were good defensively, and they knew that they had enough match winners in their ranks where one player would step up to get the goal. If they apply that sort of acumen in the final, West Ham will win. But if they have lapses in concentration, then Fiorentina will win through wide play.
Interesting. Real quickly, a debate obviously is taking place right now with David Moyes. Is he the right man to lead West Ham going forward? I think he's done a good job at the football club, obviously, but it's been a very difficult year. And to be able to get back into Europe is never going to be easy for a club like West Ham. But they have spent a ton of money, Nigel. They have spent a ton of money, and it just hasn't worked out for them. There's been some poor signings. Maybe injuries hasn't helped them either.
There have been some signings who haven't hit the ground running. They haven't had the impact that West Ham probably expected. That's the way I look at it. You want to compare it quickly, you look at Newcastle and their signings, and they've been big impact, instant impact straight away. West Ham haven't had the same luxury. The problem that David Moyes has got is right now is there's some top other managers out there with great credentials that's putting him under pressure. I think he's done tremendously well. The one thing with Moyes is he's not a manager that really rotates his team a lot. And I think that's been one of his biggest problems. Yeah. He hasn't been able to rotate his team a lot. They're still kind of, I would say, they were still kind of celebrating the high of last year's European journey, which was absolutely sensational. Yeah. And then this season, it was very difficult for them. But when you do that, you need to rotate. And I think that's been his biggest problem. And the signings haven't had the impact. But again, you can question who made the signings. Was it him fully or was it, you know, other people in there? But if they do lose, there's a big chance that he could get the boot, I feel, even though it's a European final and it might seem harsh to some people, but you've got to look at the managers that's available right now. You know, you talk about Potter, you talk about Brendan Rodgers, and I know they're two names that are constantly being mentioned with West Ham. Mm. So it's a tough one.
Mike?
Yeah, a question for you, Nige. As a former West Ham player and obviously someone who follows the team closely, if they lose and Moyes goes out, who would you tip and who would you want to replace him?
For a club like that, you need to have a manager with a bit of personality, a bit of strength, a bit of aura about him and character. I like Graham Potter, but I think that West Ham, the West Ham fan base will be a lot for him. I feel for me, the perfect one right now will probably be a Brendan Rodgers. I think Brendan Rodgers has that personality and charisma to kind of be able to stay in control of that club. And he is a footballing manager, and that's what West Ham fans want to see. I think Brendan Rodgers will probably be the better fit at the moment.
Might even make a change, Nigel, even if they do win. You know, I think that obviously conversations going on regardless right now with the managers that are available. So it'll be interesting to see. Boys, we've hit 53 minutes. Almost a record from us.
There's his piss right now, but it was worth it.
I think 56 is our record. There may be an hour show. I think we've done that.
There's never a chance that we could actually just do a show in under 40 minutes, which this is supposed to be every single time, especially when I'm here with a microphone. Appreciate you, boys. Thank you so much for all you do. Appreciate you always. We're looking forward to obviously breaking down the action as we head up, obviously closer to the Champions League final at the weekend. Don't forget, we will be discussing what happened in the Conference League final on Thursday, and we'll also be previewing what's happening with the Champions League final at the weekend, plus discussing the latest transfer news as well. So tune in on Thursday. To everybody out there who's been listening to us, the champions, thank you. But also take a minute to leave us a rating and review on your favorite podcast platform. We are available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and anywhere else you listen to podcasts. Also available as videos, so subscribe to us on YouTube. To everybody out there, we appreciate you. Thank you so much for jumping in the comments. To Nigel, welcome back. Mike, great job this week. I'm glad you're back on the show this week as well. We will see you all very soon on Thursday. Take care.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.